Welcome to the Tulsa Music Stream. And now, your host, Scott and Janice Squires. You want the dirt? You've got it.
Hey guys, Tulsa Music Stream. This is episode 112. Shortly, we'll be joined with Richie Kotzen. He's a guitar player, singer for the Winery Dogs. He was guitar player for Poison, guitar player for Mr. Big.
Oh, turn that down. We're getting our ducks in a row here. We're actually. I don't want to interrupt your lovely intro. Please continue. That was great.
Yeah. So we are on Facebook and we're on YouTube and Twitter, or actually it's X now, but make sure you hit subscribe and follow our Facebook pages and our Twitter. Our X handle is at TUL Music Stream, and we're also on podcast platforms like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, and so many more.
Yep. Thank you guys for tuning in. So we're doing it a little different tonight. There's a reason that the lead in intro has been so long. We're connecting to Richie's Zoom call. Normally, our guests will call in and connect to ours, but he had one right before ours, and it's apparently running long. So we are just going to be patient. I have established contact with the publicist. He said he'll let us in their Zoom room as soon as they're ready for us. So we wanted to just come on and go ahead and say hello to you guys. I know a lot of you have been waiting in here. Sorry for the delay, but we, you know, these kind of things, you just kind of fly by the seat of your pants and you make it work. So while we're in here, let's give a shout out to the people in the chat room. Tina Lynn Farmer, she's looking forward to this interview, has a great question, and we intend to talk about this, Tina. She says, Richie's technique is so amazing. I wonder how hard it was to lose the pick. So those of you who don't know the story, I don't want to tell the story for him, but Richie decided some years back to stop using a guitar pick for the most part. Now, don't ask me how he does what he does without a pick. I have no idea, because the guy is absolutely incredible. And we'll get into that, Tina, and see what he has to tell us. But we kind of heard the story. I'm not going to spoil it, though. It's an interesting story, but the guy is a creative genius, and we definitely can't wait to talk to him.
And Chuck Dodson says, I need a TMS shirt. Absolutely, Chuck.
Yep, yep.
And we'll be showing you how to get a t-shirt here shortly.
Yeah, actually, I already spilled the beans and told him how he can.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, all you have to do is, if you go to our Facebook page, Tulsa Music Stream, and if you go, I think it's the top left, you can go to, click on, our, it looks like a website link, and that takes you straight to our online store, which is run by our wonderful sponsor, Identity Merch. And if you place an order, man, he gets it out so fast. You order what size you want, what quantity. I think he ships like next day. I mean, it's super fast. And we love Todd at Identity Merch, so he will take care of you guys. That's not the only way you guys can support us. We definitely want you to pick up the merch, because it always helps to have the advertising around town. But if you guys enjoy what we do, you want to see more of these interviews, the best way you can support us besides that is you can make a donation to $ Tulsa Music Stream on Cash App. We're kind of, I don't mean to sound like a beggar, I'm just being honest. The fees to do this are kind of starting to stack up on us, because they're hitting us with multi-platform streaming fees. Yeah. And all kinds of stuff.
At one point, X was, you could stream
for free.
Stream for free there. Now you have to buy
premium subscription.
Yeah, premium subscription.
So they're kind of nailing us with the fees. So, you know, again, and we're happy to cover some of that. If you guys are so inclined to chip in on that, man, we really appreciate it. I think we're getting connected.
Yeah, and we'll be
recording
joined here
in progress
with Richie.
Yeah, let me get him dialed up. Richie, can you hear me?
Hey,
okay?
Guys.
Hi, how are you?
How's it going? Hold on, let me get this. I'm doing this a little differently because.
Okay, this is Todd talking.
Recording stopped.
Yeah, no worries.
I'll start the recording again. I have Richie on as well.
Yes. Okay. Hi, Richie. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well, man. Thank
Welcome
you.
To Tulsa Music Stream. I'm Scott, and this is Jana.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time tonight. I know you're kind of slamming out a lot of media tonight, so we're going to jump right into this. We definitely want to talk about your album, Nomad. Let me put this up on the screen. This is the new album that Richie is putting out called Nomad. It's coming out September 27th on BMG. And we've heard the first two singles off of it, On the Table and Cheap Shots. Both are amazing. Richie, first of all, what I want to ask you is about the actual writing and recording process. How long did it take you to write these songs and lay them down on recording?
Have you heard the whole record or just those two songs?
Just the two so far.
I see. All right. Well, actually, there's two songs on the album that have existed for quite some time. And the oldest song is a song called Nihilist, which is the last song on the album. That song was recorded probably 3 years ago, or maybe even more, 3 or 4 years ago. And then around the same time, the song Nomad was recorded. And for me, those are two very important songs on the album. It's kind of like the core of the record.
Yeah.
And I've had those songs and I was, you know, living with them and not really clear on how, when, and when I wanted to release them. I always felt like they needed to be part of a group of songs and not necessarily just put out as singles. But what happened was I had this European tour booked and I wanted to release a single to sort of advance the dates. And so I wrote the song Cheap Shots. Once that was finished, I started getting some other ideas. And those other ideas led to the other songs that are on the album. And then it was very easy to realize, okay, well, now I've got a home to place Nomad and Nihilist, and I have a record. And so when I got to the point where I was in my head that, okay, you're making an album, I really was thinking in terms of old school, in the sense that you would buy an album and it would have side A and side B, and there might be four or five songs on a side. And you know, I went back and looked at some of my favorite albums, Born to Run had 8 songs on it. I believe Bad Company, Straight Shooter, 8 songs. And there's a long list of albums that from my youth that were of that nature. And I thought, well, if I were to follow suit and make an 8 song album, how would this be? And how would that play out? And that was the only thing that I thought about was, you know, that I was going to have these two sides and have it really done as if I was, you know, planning for vinyl, not necessarily the writing per se, but the songs that I would include on it. And that's how it came to this, you know, this record. But to say how long it took is kind of tricky because, you know, the songs have existed for quite some time.
Gotcha. Well, another thing I wanted to ask you about that I was personally excited about is the connection with BMG. Now, anyone who knows your history knows that you've had some encounters with labels where they have attempted to reshape and redirect you as an artist. And I know with BMG, that's not the experience that you're having. They heard what you're doing. They believe in you. They don't want to alter anything about what you're doing. Talk about how important and how special it is to have a label like that behind you that doesn't try to change who you are.
Well, that is very, very special. And, you know, the reality is that I didn't know that was going to happen for me. And I'm very happy that it did, but I had finished the album. The album was finished. And I was thinking, okay, well, I'll put it out the way I always put out my music. And then I had a conversation with management and it became, let's see. They might be interested. And so that's how it happened. Very natural. But the beauty is that we were able to do this deal on the existing album and it didn't need to be altered or, you know, fit into any kind of box. I guess it really is a pure, honest, you know, artist album. You know, this is the album I would have made regardless of any circumstance.
Sure, sure. Go ahead,
now, you said this was basically like a Bad Company, Rod Stewart meets a Parliament, Curtis Mayfield type of vibe on the whole album. Do you still agree with that?
I wouldn't dare to. No, what I'm saying is that just the fact that there's eight songs on it.
Oh, gotcha.
I listed when I mentioned in this conversation, when I mentioned the, Born to Run and Straight Shooter by Bad Company, I was just referencing, albums from my youth and how they were structured. Under no point in time would I ever record music with some other artist in mind. That would be very strange. I have so much going on in my head that there's no room for anyone else. But I would say that I do have influences, and the artists that you named, I have listed as influences, certainly. Yeah. I've, been influenced by Parliament Funkadelic. I made a record with Bernie Worrell, the keyboard player from that band, many, many moons ago when I was just 26 years old. And I've, I saw George Benson and Stevie Wonder separately, but within the same month, when I was young in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, they were my first concerts that I remember seeing. So, there's an influence in that genre of music, but at the same time, I grew up listening to Iron Maiden and Black Sabbath. So I've got this sort of strange pendulum swing between, styles. And I always say, once I started taking guitar playing a bit more seriously, I started listening to, guys like Alan Holdsworth and Steve Morse from the Dixie Dregs. My influences kind of fall into that, that's kind of my assortment, of what I grew up listening to. There's not much country in my music. There's not much flamenco, but there's all that other stuff.
Right.
So cool. Well, you did mention Iron Maiden and the Smith Kotsen thing it blew my mind. I mean, because I just didn't, see like the two styles, and I didn't know that he had like, because you're just so used to him having the Iron Maiden style. And then I listened to the album and it's great. And I guess that was where BMG kind of came from, right? Where they first kind of learned of you was through that.
Absolutely. We worked with them on the first Smith Kotsen record and the EP and the live thing that we did. So we have a great rapport there. And so it was nice that they believed in the Nomad album and wanted to put that in the same family. And that's been really great. And obviously, Adrian and I have a really great connection, and we have plans for the future as well. So it's just been a really nice connection creatively and on the other side of the music business side of it. It's been great.
Well, let's talk about your upcoming tour dates. You just wrapped up your European tour. You're getting ready to start a tour of the U.S. here in September. I'm going to put some of the dates up on the screen. You guys can find all of Richie's dates at richiekotsen.com. I was scrolling through these. We're in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. I think the closest one to the folks in our area is down. It's actually the last date listed on the website is November 2nd at the Granada Theater in Dallas. Give us a sense of what the fans can expect to see and hear on this particular tour. I'm assuming a whole lot of the new album. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. What are we going to be hearing from you on the tour dates?
We just came off the European tour, which was great. And so now that there's the new record, certainly we're going to do, material from it. I don't know how much of it. It's interesting because I'm one of those music fans that I like to go out. If I go to the Rolling Stones, I want to hear, the songs that I grew up listening to. So I don't know how much of the new music I will do. Definitely Cheap Shots. We've been doing that song because it's out. Obviously the second single, and hopefully one or two more from the album. But one of the things that we do that I love is there's a lot of kind of spontaneous improvisation that happens with my trio, which is something I really cherish because it keeps the show interesting night after night, not knowing how a certain solo section might evolve. And that's one of the things that I really like. And I think it's something that people that come to my shows have come to really enjoy as well.
Now, who do you have with you on the trio? Who's on bass and drums with you?
So the bass player's name is Dylan Wilson. He's been playing bass with me for the last, since 2011. And he's a great musician, great bass player, and a good friend. And the drummer is new. His name is Kyle Hughes. And he's a young man that's come to California from England. And he's making a name for himself. And he stepped in for my European tour and did a great job. So he will do this U.S. run with me as well.
Awesome.
Cool. Now, I watched the video for Cheap Shots, and, you know, you're in a boxing ring type video. I'd like to know, where did you shoot that at? What location? And speaking of a power trio, you know, you're in there when you're playing the drums and the guitar and the bass. And I would think that you would like throw some people off and like have you play rhythm guitar, like have like showing you as a four piece.
Well, but I'm a three piece, so it's not a four piece. But it was kind of a tongue in cheek, kind of a funny gag. You know, I asked my friend who's a director. I said, "How can we? Could we do that, something like that, without being too expensive?" He's like, yeah. He said, "I know how to do it. Just, you know, try this." And so we put it together, and I just thought that was a fun, kind of a silly visual. I mean, you know, the video was done in an afternoon in Glendale, California. We went over for the other scene with the gym. My friend Jeff Wolf is an excellent director, writer, but he's also been a stuntman for many, many years. So he choreographed the whole thing with the two boxers who are also up-and-coming stuntmen. And I actually did the editing, which was a lot of fun to kind of go through that and pull that together and make those scenes work. It was Jeff's idea at the end to take the microphone and swing it and kind of knock out the guy who was the bully in the video. So it turned out to be a really fun afternoon. And, you know, I'll probably make another video here for one more song. You know, it's just a matter of coming up with, you know, what do you do for the video? You know, you got to come up with something that kind of works for the song. But we'll see. Hopefully there will be another one.
Well, that guy that got smacked totally had it coming to him. So I was happy to see that. That was a good one.
So where do you find your inspiration of writing? You produce, you're writing, and now you said you're editing videos. There's always so much work on the table for you. But in today's world, where are you finding your inspiration for your lyric content?
Yeah, you know, it just kind of comes to me. You know, it's interesting. I was telling a story. There's a song on the album called "This Is a Test." And this song came in the strangest way. I was planning a trip back to visit my parents in Pennsylvania. And I set up a very small recording system with my laptop. And I wanted to test to make sure everything was going to work once I got there. So I set it up and I put the microphone on. I plugged in the guitar. I pressed record. I recorded both the guitar and the voice at the same time. And I was strumming some chords. And I was singing a melody, not necessarily words, kind of mumbling. And every now and then, I would go, "This is a test. This is a test." And I would go back to the other part, and then I would come to the chorus. And after 2 minutes of this, I realized, wait a minute, this isn't a test. This is a song. And I went back and I listened to what I did, and I realized, you know, that's a song right there. So I started filling in the blanks. So places where I wasn't singing lyrics and I was just making sounds, I actually put in, lyrics came to me. And so I wrote it all together and it became a song. And so that was a very interesting way that came together. A couple other songs, like the song "Escape," that came out of a dream. I was in bed. You know, and I woke up with this melody in my head. I want to get out. I want to escape. And I had the melody and the lyric at the same time. So I went to the living room. I pulled out my recorder app on my phone and I started, you know, documenting that. And then the next day I got up, I listened to it, and I knew that I had a song in the making. So these things come out of left field, I suppose you'd say. It's just completely random. You never know when you're going to have the inspiration, when it's going to hit you.
So I only have one Poison related, and it's a music related question. You entered that band in 1991. We know that you were very instrumental in the writing of Native Tongue, and including the two singles that came out. You entered that band when the landscape of music was really changing, and that particular genre was kind of getting pushed out, and grunge was being ushered in. Do you recall having memories where you were kind of telling yourself, I'm going to be okay, I'm going to survive this change in the landscape because my talents and abilities are so diverse and they transcend this genre, you know, into many different genres, and you really had your pick of which direction you could go. So my guess my question is, did you know you were going to survive that change?
Well, you have to understand something. I was never a part of it to begin with, and I know on the outside, you know, people know that I was in the band and that sort of thing. But that is a very small flash of light in a very long time period of making music. You know, you're talking about, I've been making records since 1989 under my own name. And I did one album and 3 months worth of live playing. So it's really a very much of a blip in my memory bank. But what I will say, and I'll tell you something that's much more interesting, is that prior to joining that band and making that record, I was signed to a major recording contract with Interscope as a solo artist. And I was ready to make my solo album. Danny Kortchmar, who had just finished doing End of the Innocence with Don Henley, had submitted a budget. We picked out five or six Richie songs, and then we were going to write four or five more together, and we were going to make this album. And the album, the music that I was writing, it was not hard rock. It was very, it was almost like Hall and Oates with guitar solos, with more aggressive guitar playing, and it dealt into more of some Sly and the Family Stone. There were elements of kind of Free and Humble Pie, but it was very soul driven, and it was still rock, but very soul driven. And we had all this stuff ready to go, and the label back then, it was Jimmy Iovine and Tom Wally, who had moved me out to Los Angeles from Philadelphia. And at the last minute, after me being in LA for a year and writing with all these people, I wrote with Robert Hazard, who wrote Girls Just Want to Have Fun. I wrote with Dwayne Hitchings, who wrote Do You Think I'm Sexy for Rod Stewart. Edgar Winter and I had written a song together and performed together at the Bill and Ted movie premiere. So all this stuff was happening. At the last minute, Interscope decides, you know what? We signed you to make a hard rock album, and we're not going to let you make this record. Well, naturally, I flipped out. So your question to me of I'm going to survive, I'm this and that, I had the attitude of, these guys don't know the artist that I am. They don't know what I'm about, and I want out of my deal. So certainly I believed in myself enough to literally piss on a very expensive, very prestigious recording contract with very important people. Right. And so the way that I ended up in Poison was very strange, because as they were releasing me from my contract, which I had requested, the A&R guy said, Rhett Michaels is calling, interested in meeting you. And I remember saying to him, I said, are you crazy? I don't want to make my own record that's hard rock, and you want me to go meet with a hard rock band that's established. I don't understand you. Yeah. And he said, well, he said, I don't understand you either, but go meet with him. It's somebody else that you should know. So I drove from Los Feliz out to Calabasas, and I sat down, and I liked him immediately. And we started talking, and I realized then and there that we were going to make a record that he and I would write together. So at that point, the situation appealed to me. And I thought, you know, this is something that could be a good experience for me to do. So I never had that sort of sentiment that you mentioned of surviving this or surviving that, because I wasn't a part of it. I wasn't here during that movement. I was in 9th, 10th, 11th grade in school when all that was happening in Hollywood, you know, in the 80s. But I will say this, coming out of that group, when I got re-signed to Geffen, I signed a new recording contract with a major label, all they would talk about was how do we market you without talking about your time in Poison. And that drove me crazy because back then was, you don't have to say anything because this will appeal to a different demographic. You don't have to worry about that. And that was the narrow-minded scope of the record business and the gatekeepers back then.
Right.
And so as an effect of that, I had a very hard time in the 90s from about 95 up until 99, until I joined a band with Stanley Clarke. I was constantly fending off that, you know, bad karma or whatever you want to call it of being associated with that band, who I liked actually, and I liked the record, but the gatekeepers in the record business decided that it wasn't allowed anymore. And that really was a struggle for many, many years, and very frustrating. And it was a weird position because I had saved a lot of money from Warner Brothers publishing deal I made and my Geffen recording contract, and a few dollars that I made from Poison. So, you know, I was well invested and I didn't really have to do much, but the problem was I wanted to make my art and I had a hard time getting a deal. But the good news, the great thing that happened was that shortly after I made that record with Stanley Clarke, the record business changed and the artist could make a record and release it without a label. And the minute that happened, then everything changed for me and things started to get better again.
Yeah.
You know, also on Native Tongue, you know, you had a lot of writing credits on that album. To me, and this is my opinion, it was their last great album. They haven't done anything like that since. And, you know, you got your Fender endorsement, which was another cool thing. I thought Stand on Arsenio Hall was a great show. I actually rewatched that. I saw that when I was young. And
yeah, that was a great moment. I remember him being really, really a great guy, Arsenio Hall.
Yeah.
And he came back and talked to us, and what a great person he is. And he was such a great television personality. I really enjoyed that.
That's cool. And Mr. Big, you know, on their last tour, you're a big part of Mr. Big. What are your thoughts about them putting up the tour?
Again, I don't think much about either of those two things because, like I said, it was a very quick flash. Again, with Mr. Big, we made some nice music together, but I was there for a very short period of time. We only really performed, with the exception of a very short run on the East Coast and a West Coast warm-up show, we only played in Japan and Indonesia. So it was a nice thing to have done. And at the time, I really wanted to play with Billy Sheehan. And so I got that opportunity. But when I think about my life as a musician, you know, I think about, you know, the 30 or so albums I'm on, I don't think a lot about it. So I think they were, you know, nice things to have done, but I can't really, I was 29, I'm 54. I don't have much there for you.
Sure.
Right.
Well, a lot of people in this area, when we announced that we were having you on the show, there's so many people here that love the Winery Dogs and what a fantastic project that is. I know you guys did your third album last year and you did a tour. Many people would like to know. I get the sense that that's kind of on the back burner now, but what are future plans for more music and touring with that group, or do you not know at this point?
Well, I will say that was a wonderful thing, you know, being able to work with Billy and Mike was fantastic. And I do have very meaningful upfront memories because it's more recent, and it's something that I was integral in developing from the ground up, as opposed to kind of stepping into a situation that other people created. So the Winery Dogs is something I hold very close and dear. And hopefully there's more to come somewhere down the line, probably not anytime soon. But when we played our last show in Japan last year, you know, the attitude was, hey, you know, we're still friends. We still like each other. So, you know, the door's always open. One day the phone might ring and our schedules will line up, and who knows, there might be another album. But the future is the future, so that's what hope is for.
Sure, absolutely. And I don't want to let you go tonight without bringing up this massive undertaking that this must have been to put this together. 50 for 50. This is a triple album, 50-track release. Talk to us about, like I said, how massive an undertaking was it to put this together? And I'm assuming you're very pleased with the finished product.
Yeah, you know, I love that record. I really, you know, especially the first side of it. It's really something that I'm really proud of. And it came to me. One of my friends, I was listening to his work, and he had an album that had like 30 songs on it. And I was on the road, and I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, man, I've got all this material, some of it's finished, some of it's not. I should finish that, and I should write some new stuff if it comes to me, and see if I can't get to a point where I have 50 compositions and release it on February 3rd of 2020, because that's when I was turning 50. So it was just sort of a thought that I had. So while I was on the road, I had access to all these ideas, so I started writing lyrics. Because honestly, lyrics is really the thing that seems to, you know, hang a lot of folks up. But if you have a story, you got a song. So I started going through this stuff and writing lyrics. And then when I got home, I had a 3-month window before I had to go back on tour to South America. And I started recording this stuff. And before I knew it, I was, you know, 38 songs in. And I started writing other stuff that was brand new, and things are coming left and right. And it was just this whirlwind. And my attitude all along was, I don't have to do this. This is not necessary for me to do. But if it actually comes together, it would be kind of cool to have done it. And so it worked. I remember like sometime in November, early November, I'm like, whoa, I've got 50 songs that I wrote that no one's heard before. And so let me see if I can call my mastering engineer and we can put this together. And that's really how it happened.
Very cool.
That's amazing.
Tell me about your touring rig. I know you like to, you know, to play with your picks and things like that. And you have a clear tone. Are you bringing much gear with you?
Well, I use my Telecaster, my signature model Fender that you had mentioned earlier about me working with Fender, and that's my main guitar, and I bring a backup. I don't really switch guitars on this particular tour. I'm really just sticking with the Telecaster. And I use the Marshall, which is called the 1959 Super Lead, and it's the one with the plexiglass panel. I've got a bunch of those. So I take two of them on the road with a 412 cabinet, and then in front of it, I've got a pedal that is called the Fly Rig, and because it's very small and it's easy to take along if you go on the airplane, you don't have to carry a big pedal board. And so in that Fly Rig, it has the main effects that I use, which would be delay, reverb, and overdrive. And it also has a Leslie rotating speaker effect. And I have a wah pedal as well. So that's the setup. It's very simple. I like to keep things relatively simple so I can focus on singing and playing.
Now, your fan Tina, who's in here with us tonight, we first went on live. One of the first things she brought up was the fact that you've stopped using guitar picks for the most part. I think in a recent interview you said you still may use them in a studio setting. Are you still playing without a pick live?
Oh, live, I don't carry them live. In the studio, I use them here and there. But, initially that whole thing started because I was in Brazil on a tour and I was not happy with how I was playing. And my attitude was that I'm not going to get any better practicing in my hotel room overnight. So what do I do? So I figured I'd shock myself into a different direction by trying to do the whole set without a pick. Playing with my fingers is nothing new. I've done that my whole life here and there. but committing to doing it for an entire set was something new. And so, yeah, so out of that, it kind of slowed me down. It focused me a little more. I felt more connected, you know, connected to the instrument. I want to say spiritually connected, but literally physically connected. And then it just kind of evolved where I was like, wow, you know, I don't have to worry about where's my guitar picks. If I don't even bring them. And so, you know, it's always funny when you come off stage and you're on the way to the bus and someone says, hey, can I get a guitar pick from you? And in my mind, I'm like, did you not watch the performance? Did you not put a guitar pick anywhere on the stage? You know?
Well, I have to ask, are there any techniques that you just can't do without a pick, or have you found workarounds for all of them?
Well, there's definitely techniques that you can't do because they're picking, like alternate picking, doesn't sound the same. You can do things that sound similar. And so I've evolved with those, you know, and like, you know, years ago, I used to do that sweep picking thing. But the reality was I always had more of a legato approach with that. So to do that without the pick is relatively easy. So, you know, what happened was I did figure out how to execute some of the other things that I used the pick for, but then I had a new repertoire open up some other things. So what has happened with my playing expanded, you know, I didn't forget how to play with a guitar pick. It's like a bicycle. But what I did do was grow my finger style to a level that I didn't have before. So it really came out as a win-win.
Sure, sure.
And we've had so many, I don't know, what, three members of Vixen. We haven't had Julia. I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
Yeah, Julia, how do you say your wife's last name?
Laje.
And you met her in Brazil, of course.
Yeah.
How is playing, I guess, being married to a bass player who's all, you know, on tour all the time, and you're on tour all the time, and when you guys, I mean, is it kind of complicated to you know, constantly miss each other, or because we love to have her on too.
Oh yeah, you should have her on. It's you know, it's really actually works well for us. And you know, the only conflict is sometimes, you know, a guitar cable may go missing, so you know, maybe I
took it.
Yeah, she takes one of my mic stands, or I take one of her guitar cables. Now we had Larry DiMarzio sent me a bunch of black cables and sent her a bunch of pink cables, so now we know who's
smart.
That's in order. But you know, it's nice. You know, we have that in common that we can talk about music, and it's nice to have someone that you respect musically to run ideas by.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So it really has been great.
Well,
that's cool.
Richie, we appreciate your time. We understand that we need to start wrapping this up before we let you go. We just want to one more time put this up on the screen. Everybody, please go to richiekotzen.com and make sure you order the new album Nomad coming out on September 27th. It is fantastic. Richie, we wish you all the best. Thank you for your time tonight on Tulsa Music Stream. God bless you.
Thank you very much.
Take
cool.
care, bud. We'll see
Take
you later.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So there you have it.
Yeah, he's a busy man. He's got a lot of things going on, a lot of press. We had a limited amount of time with him tonight, but we're grateful for what we got. What a great guy. What an accomplished artist. So talented. That was a lot of fun. Thank you, guys. Sorry we couldn't get to any of your comments or questions, but we were kind of pressed for time there. But that's okay. And I'm also sorry to report. Let me double check this. I think I got a message from Adam Richmond that he's not going to be able to join us tonight. We were going to have him on to kind of talk about what's going on with him. You know, we're getting close to Rocklahoma. Of course, Adam hosts Surviving Rocklahoma. He is the eyes and ears of the Rocklahoma world, and he was going to come on tonight and kind of tell us what's going on. We'll try to get him on at another time that works out for him. But please support Adam in his efforts with Surviving Rocklahoma. And he's a good guy. He's overcome some health issues, and he's really risen above some challenges that have come his way. Mm-hmm. We're proud of him. And Adam, we'll reconnect with you soon. Sorry you couldn't join us tonight.
Thank you guys for tuning in and joining the chat room and chiming in with the interview. We really appreciate you guys. Tina Lynn Farmer, thank you so much. Yes. And Lance Mitchell, thank you. Stanley Reason, Justin McDougall. Leslie, thank you so much. Brian Richardson says, am I the only one here that gets their most creative thoughts at 3 a.m.? And that isn't that something?
I don't know why the publicist was calling, but...
Jamie Hoper, thank you so much. He said he has also produced River of Dreams, Billy Joel's last album. Cool, man. Well, thank you guys so much. You can, make sure you follow us at Tulsa Music Stream on Facebook, and check us out. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, and we're on X. We're at TUL Music Stream. We're also on podcast platforms like Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Amazon, and so many others. So we'd appreciate you guys checking out all of our different formats and different platforms.
Yep, and it's very important that I mention our sponsors before we get out of here. Guys, this show is coming up. Man, it's here this Saturday night. Go see the Iron Maidens with special guest Dime Store Riot at the Shrine. This is Saturday night. The tickets are just $25. That is a cheap, cheap cost for a great night of entertainment. Go get those at stubwire.com. Our friend Eddie Trunk is going to be out there hosting the show along with our buddy Doug Burgess from DEB Concerts. Go to that show and have a great time. And as I just mentioned, Rocklahoma is exactly 1 month from today. Today is July 30th. That thing kicks off August 30th. So go enjoy all of those amazing artists that you see there on the screen. It's going to be a great time. Make sure you stop by Doug's DEB concert stage. He's going to have a lot of amazing artists on there. It's going to be a party. Thanks again to our sponsor, Bill's Bud Connection. If you guys have any needs for a medical cannabis card, you can call or text Carolyn at 918-521-9349 or visit Bill's Bud Connection on Facebook as well. Thank you for your partnership with Tulsa Music Stream. We also want to thank our friend Todd Brandon at Pest Patrol. He takes care of the Squire's house for all of our pest control needs. He can take care of yours as well. Please call him at 918-582-PEST-7378, or you can visit pestpatroltulsa.com. Same thing for plumbing. This is who we use for all of our plumbing needs, our friends at Horizon Plumbing. Please give them a call at 918-258-9100 for any plumbing needs you might have. We also want to give a special thanks to our legacy sponsors, Sycamo Filmworks, Identity Merch, and Shipman Photos. We truly appreciate you all's support of what we're doing. So again, just shout out to everybody in the chat. John Spencer says, another great interview. Thanks, Scott and Jana. Thank you, John Spencer, for tuning in. We appreciate you so much. Shorty Malloy, how the heck are you, Shorty? Great job.
Shorty.
Guys. Thank you, bud. We appreciate you. Benjamin Cutler, Gilligan, hey, bud. Good to see you in here. Tina, thank you for joining. Lance Mitchell, Stanley Reason, he says, the Squires love it.
Yeah, number one Stunna from YouTube says, cheers from the Rainbow Bar and Grill on the Sunset Strip in Hollywood.
Wow, that is too cool, man. Justin McDougall, Leslie, everybody in here, we're so grateful that you guys join us so faithfully. So many of you are in here each and every time we go live. It means the world to us, guys. So what we're going to do is we're going to get out of here and go work on booking more great artists like Richie
Kotzen.
That's
right. So we really appreciate you guys. Make sure you friend and follow our all of our pages and hit our notification bell on YouTube and hit subscribe. We're always needing more subscribers on YouTube. Yep. So and make sure you follow us on X at TUL Music Stream. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. You all have a great rest of the week, and we'll see you here next time on Tulsa Music Stream. Take care.